And we've got the major Ed Dames tonight, remote viewer. We'll get right into some other things with him when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Major Ed Dames with us. Ed, let's get into some specifics now of some of the things you've been working on. And you said one thing that we've been in the process of a World War III. It just hasn't really popped up yet. What did you mean by that?
No, it has popped up. I just mean it's a slow burn. World War III, we often think of it as a nuclear slugfest,
right,
those kind of things. But as I've mentioned before, years ago, World War III is a slow burn. It's just a long, continuous fuse with no big nuclear slug. I'm not saying that nukes aren't going to be used, but it's not going to be an earth-changing event in that regard, too, because this planet doesn't belong to us. I think it's an experiment. I think long ago, human DNA was tweaked, and we're not going to be allowed to destroy this kind of garden. I think it's also interesting that, in terms of the subject at hand, that the remote viewers over the last 25 years, and myself as a leader, the program manager, both in the field with the likes of Jacques Vallée and other scientists, we've spent far less time investigating Earth's past and Earth's mysteries than the so-called ET and UFO associated phenomena, which is very interesting. So one of the things I hope to gain from contact or entry into the Federation, whatever that is a knowledge of who we are and what we are. So that's one of my goals for contact.
If you're allowed in, will it be via remote viewing or will it be physical?
Oh, no, it has to be physical for me. Yeah, I'm a physical guy. The remote viewing stuff, I wouldn't have stuck with it for a quarter of a century if it wasn't fascinating. I'm not usually entertained.
But you bore quickly, Ed.
Yes, I do. I spend nowadays, these days and times, I spend a good 50% of my time in the field pursuing RV remote viewing leads, too. And that's how we got our original Close Encounters of the Second Kind. I was, as you know, the project manager for proprietary scientific projects that, in the past, that out in Chaco Canyon in New Mexico, where we had lots of instrumentation that allowed us to be in a place that we knew was active. Rather than chasing the UFO phenomenon, we could meet it, head it off at the pass. I'm using those terms very loosely because they knew everything that we were doing, of course. But I think it's the biggest mystery of our times, and I'm certainly very enthralled with mysteries. And this is the greatest mystery-solving tool that there is. Now, we had scientific means. I think some of your listeners are familiar with a real thing, the Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group. That was the cover name for a UFO working group within not just the Department of Defense, but NSA and CIA and other places like that. And I was the youngest member of that group. And we met during the Reagan administration secretly in the sense of the Compartment and Information Facility with all of us had all the clearances in the world to discuss what we each knew, Navy, Army, National Reconnaissance Office, and all that. But we held our cards so closely to our chest for administrative reasons that nothing really came out of that. What we wanted, one thing, we had an agenda. We wanted to determine where we should go, what was the ground truth involved, measurements and all that we had. And we wanted money. But presidents don't have any money. But the Air Force did. General Abramson at the time, just before the downfall of the erstwhile Soviet Union, he had all this money for bringing Pebbles and Star Wars and all that. We were trying to trick the Air Force into giving us money to study this under the rubric of maybe we need to develop software to determine for NORAD when a fast walker was a real Russian missile or a UFO, those kinds of things, too. And it didn't work. Because the DOD, as I've said before, and CIA, Political Economic Intelligence, DOD, Military Intelligence, there was no charter, no license to spend American tax dollars on looking at these things. And yet all of us in this little tight group had these bottom drawers with these very, very interesting things in there where, Air Force give you one example. I have to be careful. Classified boys, Air Force plane with five officers on it, lieutenants all the way up to majors, plus the pilots on a monitoring mission. Here comes this thing right up alongside its starboard flank. Lieutenant panics, pulls out his Surface 45, shoots right through the window.
No,
I'm not kidding. It's a real world situation, and I think it actually got out. Those kinds of things. Well, what happens to those out there in the deep dark world of intelligence? They get shelved because nobody knows what the heck that was. That's why I got out to study this, and in terms of business and the projects that I ran with very prominent scientists in the desert. Those were proprietary. They were funded by European royalty, a lot of money. And because they're proprietary, I could never talk to the public and people like you and your listeners about them. So I said, okay, I'm going to stop that, fund these myself, and now I can talk. I still can't talk about the missions that we did.
Well, tell me about this Federation. I mean, are you thinking you're going to be invited into it or what?
No, I have two ideas that I can put. I'll put one in better context momentarily. One is that I think that I try to use in terms of consciousness tools and in the field feedback, whether it's a 50 caliber machine gun interfering with the logistics or whether it's, you know, waving a white flag, knocking on their door and all that, whether or not that has anything to do with it, they're going to be here anyway after the dust settles in about 50 years. That I firmly believe.
If they're not already.
Oh, no, they're here, but they're operating clandestinely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm talking about overtly.
Okay.
Yeah, over. I think it was a TV program, Alien Nation.
Uh-huh.
I haven't watched TV since I was 16. I really hate television. And but I do remember being in a hotel and seeing a TV program, Alien Nation, where they were actually here and integrated with humans. That kind of thing. And about the way down the road. But right now, before I talk about the more difficult to understand aspects, I will tell you about the here already ones, okay?
Okay.
All right. My focus and my work, classified work, is on a group of humans that operate on the surface of Earth. Now, there are, as I said, there are parking spots underground on the moon, and there's an operations center underground on Mars. There are also parking garages for machines in seamounts, very, very deep in the ocean, very deep in seamounts, too. And these things, they don't really pass through the water, these we don't use vehicles in our business. These objects, and not all of them are objects. These things, they pass through the water and they simply materialize in these underground garage, underwater and seamounts garage points like that. So there's those kinds of things going on. More importantly, I'm looking at a surface construct where these humans that were not homegrown came from somewhere else on ships. This galactic project, they are the ones that are responsible for what some of your listeners may have seen on the internet, this plasma type of thing that I'll use these terms loosely. We're very, very strict in our technical work. Fires a beam at a Minuteman missile launch test and sends the missile off course. Have you ever seen this?
Yes, photo? I saw that.
Okay. Well, that's not a physical thing. It's a plasma type of entity that's used as a tool, and that is directed from an above ground command center on Earth. It's not by these humans. They look just like us. They actually have outbound teams. They can defend themselves, but
they speak like us.
I do. They speak any language on Earth because they have to be involved in logistics. They have to have food, energy, electricity for their operations, and other things like that too. But their operation is very, very different, and they are not from here. They're not, and I'm interested in them. But They are in association with something else that is far more esoteric, that has technologies that are beyond our idea of technology. In the early days, 25 years ago, we used to look as remote viewers at these particular things in the sky or whatever, and I termed them transcendental technologies because we had no idea what was going on. There's another agency, and they are not human, and they are not extraterrestrial. They're what I would call extra-dimensional. They can be in two dimensions at once if they choose. They're almost invisible. We caught one on camera once, too. In my book, my autobiography, you see me jokingly talk to a Navajo officer, a Navajo policeman, and I say, oh, I'm here from Washington, D.C. to take a break, too. I'm looking for an elephantine amoebic thing that blah, blah, blah. That. Yeah, well, you know what? They look very different than us, and they're very big, and they're very intelligent.
Are these like shadow people or something
else? No, they're not. I have no idea. I wouldn't even know what to call them, these entities. They're not elementals.
But dimensional.
They're in two dimensions at once, it would seem. It's very difficult for us, our thesaurus. And remember, in remote viewing, no matter how disciplined you are in our technique and our skill, everything exists as a pattern of information. So you're going and you're grabbing a pattern associated with your target or the event that may be your target. You're coming back in a tachycinetic sense from the right brain to the left brain to look for a label in your experience to hang on to this thing. I've used the example many times, and I do in my basic workshop. If one has never experienced the color red before and you're training target blind, because you're only giving a set of numbers, as you know, is the Bolshoi ballet performance and the curtains red and you're attempting to describe this event. If you've never perceived the color red before, if that's not in your thesaurus, your dictionary, your experience, you have no word label.
You have nothing. That's true.
No. So you have to use something as close as possible. When we as remote viewers are dealing with these kinds of transcendental, esoteric in some cases, metaphysical in other cases, things, we have to resort to allegory, to analogy, and sometimes metaphor to try to cope with what we're perceiving. And in some cases, it's totally outside our ken. For instance, orbs, this phenomenon of orbs.
Whatever they may be.
I'll tell you what, as remote viewers, the best of the best, we can't grab anything. We can't do it. There's nothing we can grab in terms of our cultural evolutionary thesaurus that can suggest what we're dealing with.
But you see them in remote viewing. You just don't know what they are.
We can't get into our dictionary. There's no common denominator in our experiences, no matter how eclectic you could be a physicist or a nuclear engineer or a theologist that I've trained many people, types of people. We can't grasp what we're dealing with. It's outside, literally outside our ken. That's not to say that we couldn't be trained, but it may be a factor of not our software, of what we know, but our hardware, our bicameral brain, having evolved in this particular niche of the woods, can't grasp. We don't have the hardware to deal with the associations and the reality of what this is.
Are these entities evil? Are they good?
Are we harking back now to the ones I'm talking? I'm about to talk about that are in association with the
dimensional ones.
Yeah, I perceive them as nothing but good. I mean, if you analyze this outreach program that's attempting to not just forestall, but to prevent, because they know we're all many UFO types of sightings over the years, and I can get into many of these. They're actually intervention, George, and not just observation. Yes, we as remote viewers are observing them, but they are intervening as well as observing, and they know every single nuclear warhead hidden, surreptitious or whatever, on this planet. They know where every single one is, and they can neutralize it in a heartbeat. there will never be on this planet, because it's not allowed by something out there, a nuclear slugfest. All of our youth, you're probably not as old as me, but we had to practice these nuke drills under our desks in elementary.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we did it. We did it because...
And people had fallout shelters in their little backyards and their basements.
Well, those may come in necessary now for quite a different reason.
Right.
Because this 11,500-year cyclic big thing that passes through our neck of the woods, this time may come as close to us as it did to Mars, although we know it won't be that close because Mars got extinguished.
I want to talk with you about that after the break, but let's get back to these beings or whatever they may be. You're one of the few people who really thinks that they're whatever these things are, that they're good.
I don't. Good is not an objective.
Which doesn't sound like Dr. Doom to me.
I support them.
What do you mean you support them?
I would support anything they're doing. They've been around for a long time. Hyper intelligent. One of my philosophies is go with the winning team. And I don't know many winning teams anymore, having been at the top of the ladder in terms of esoteric intel, you know, the mystique of intelligence. Well, I've been at the top.
Are they aware that you're aware?
Yes, they are.
They are.
They are absolutely aware. Yeah. And they work in consort with these very human types, too, to do things. For instance, they took the finger off of the nuclear trigger. There would have been a nuclear war twice since 1955 alone.
I believe that.
Yeah, but these guys stopped it. I said, guys, Lucy, these entities stopped it. At the same time, let's say, for instance, I know where this terrestrial facility is. And I decide I want to go there, physically go there, above ground. It's not deep in a mountain or something else like that. It's above ground. And I want to go there. Well, these guys can turn me away. They can take on any. They're the perfect shapeshifters. They can play you like a marionette electronically or otherwise. All the abduction phenomena that we're aware of and that have been reported by our people like John Mack and other greats. They're all these guys are all responsible for that. They have an agenda.
Right.
The Ariel School incident in 1994 outside of Harare, Zimbabwe, where these school children were presented with this UFO and these gray creatures. There are no grays, George. These entities I'm talking about are barely visible to the camera. They can present themselves however they want to, and in this particular era, they present themselves as grays and reptilians, you know, because it's just like Hollywood. Keep the interest up.
If they wanted to be aggressive, if they wanted to do harm, could they do that?
Absolutely. That's why it's so funny, your last guest did this conjecture about the ET flotilla off the coast there, too. It's just ludicrous in terms of what we know in my team, because they fire a missile at, you know what, at
Texas. It's goodbye ships, right?
No.
They wouldn't retaliate?
No. Oh, they could shut down the minds. They could shut down the consciousness of every single individual on board the ships in a moment.
Jeez.
So that nobody would be pushing anybody.
They wouldn't even have to play around with the ship.
No, and they don't kill. They're not like us. And they're not evil.
Well, is this just a different faction? Maybe this is a good one as opposed to some bad ones that are out there?
No, the bad ones that we know of, they're not ET UFO related, as far as we're concerned. We could, you know, we could have missed some too. For instance, let's take the idea of jinn. Are you familiar with the Bell Witch? The Bell Witch.
Yeah, hold on, Ed. We're going to hit this break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Bell Witch, and I also want to get into these solar flares when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, the coasttocoastam.com website is now iPad compatible, so go have some fun if you have an iPad and do whatever you do. And we'll be back in a moment with Major Ed Dames on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, welcome back to Coast with Major Ed Dames. Ed, you were talking about some analogy with the Bell Witch story. I'll let you fill
Yes, I was saying that these other entities that are probably these transcendental entities that are probably responsible for us not annihilating ourselves to date, They're very different. They're not, I call them extra dimensional, but we have picked up one on camera, and we know that it allowed us to. They're very, they don't exist in another dimension, and they're very different than ghosts or any supernatural thing, like jinn, for instance. The Bell Witch, which is probably the most documented supernatural event in North American mm-hmm. history, one of my professional development students was very interested in it. So as a practicum, we took a look at it. And then I became interested in, and personally wanted to look at where the Bell Witch, which has not really manifested itself, or that phenomenon has not manifested itself in a while, I investigated it too. It exists now, presently, present time, as a point above the ground in a desert area. In essence, it's in another dimension. And there are at least 11 or 12 dimensions out there that science are aware of now. But they exist in another dimension where it can pop into this one, do what it did, which is extremely interesting. Even General Sherman ran away.
And then pop out again.
And pop out again, too. And so if we wanted to study that, the circumstances under which it, or things like ghosts, which are energy patterns, mind patterns out there, we wanted to study those for scientific purposes, that would be good. But time's running out, life is short, and I don't have any more time for jinn. The jinn.
The jinn.
Yeah.
Which the Arabs, of course, feared. They were like genies, weren't they?
Yes, and I can see now after my student brought this to my attention and what went down there too, I'd be running too.
All right, look, Ed, we're coming up to the Mayan calendar date, December 21st, 2012. Solar flares. Do we see anything there? Or is it beyond?
I've mentioned before, I don't see any correlation, any correspondence. None. Very much very analogous to the Y2K situation.
Yep.
Art Bell asked me if there's anything there. I said, we see nothing, Art. And the Mayan calendar, the same thing. No correlation whatsoever with what we're perceiving date-wise. However, in 2013, different story. Different story. And I'm beginning to be a believer because some of my students are starting to track a very big object, which they feel is this thing that I've described that passes close by between the Earth and the Sun. Beginning to track that, I'm starting to become a believer in Planet X. I just don't have time to look at it, but my students are tracking something big.
Do you assign the students, or are they on their own now?
No, they're on their own now. They're pros. I train them. They're off. And they're off and running. They're doing a fantastic job. If you want to meet them and see their projects, one of their projects is they're fascinating projects. The things I used to do when I was in my younger days when I had time. Go to learnrv.com and go to the forums and look at advanced projects. And if you're a new student, a new remote viewing student, whether you learn at a workshop or through the DVDs, all the help's there. I'm there every day. They're there every day, and it's all free. All the advanced stuff is there. But the advanced project section is very sexy. It's extremely fascinating. And these guys are pros, too, just like me. They're my peers now. I train them. They have the experience that they need, and they are now my peers.
So we may not have the solar flares now, but you are convinced they're going to keep coming and possibly over a 1 or 2 year period. Bang, 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 like that?
I don't know what the period will be. All I'm doing is feeling afraid of 2013. Because it's the top of the solar cycle there, too, and even scientists are chewing their nails on this one.
What do you recommend people do?
Well, it's the same as always.
Run.
you need to know where to go, though. Even if you've got to have a place to run, too. Especially if you live in the cities where things will be off the shelves really quickly and your water might go down, no gas pumps work, that kind of thing. You need to know where to go. So you have to identify that first, too. I don't have much time to do it anymore, but I've done many, many personal contracts with personal sanctuaries where your unconscious works with the matrix to show you where its form fits your personality to where you need to be during this kill shot sequence. The major thing is It can't be in a metropolitan area with some exceptions. For instance, Christchurch, New Zealand, has suffered this devastating earthquake that leveled the city. That actually happens to be a kill shot survival zone because citizens are ready for anything, anything, at any time, and they're an educated society. It's not like L.A. or Oakland or Detroit or Chicago or New Orleans where in 6 hours if things go down, there's riots in the streets and people are raping your wife and the kids and things like that. You have an educated society. So there are many elements that go into these survival zones. The bunker mentality, no, doesn't work. You're going to run out of ammo. You're going to run out of food.
You're going to run out of water.
Maybe not. Not if you live near a road. But you may need a doctor or a dentist. Abscess tooth will kill you. So people need other people. So that's a criterion, too. But water and food are the big one. So a lot of these areas have fresh water and fish. Because we're looking at not only xeric conditions, very dry, lots of water. That's what's going to kill most of the people in this kill shot scenario, is the lack of water in the short term. Many people die from drought conditions, because not just directly from dehydration, but from not having food to eat.
Wars over, Ed? Wars over water?
No, not until about a year or so into the kill shot sequence, where nobody cares about fighting anymore. And as I've said, all the warring parties go home.
Will this be a Mad Max society?
Yes. Yeah, except for people in these survival zones. And again, there's educated, there are people in the places. There are some places in Norway, still some places in New Zealand, very few spots in the world where you've got a society that is very educated, and they're not barbaric. But for the most part, and in fact, even in terms of the contact imperative that I'm concerned with, I think that we need to give the keys back to dad for the car, because if we rebuild our society, we'll still make the mistakes that we did. We need to act as intelligently as possible to elicit contact. That's my second criterion. I want to see if using consciousness tools, which appear to be a lingua franca for the Federation, for intelligences out there of many different shapes, sizes, and forms, some possibly or really unfathomable to us and nevertheless intelligent. We need to display intelligence to become members, entry-level members to this Federation. Having said that, I'll hark back to what I said earlier, that they're coming here anyway, and we will have contact whether we want it or not. There's one wild card.
What is that?
Bigfoot.
Bigfoot?
Bigfoot is a big wild card to me. The Bigfoot, as I mentioned on your shows before, Bigfoot is an extraterrestrial, but it's an avatar. It lives, these entities, intelligent entities, what was the Han Solo partner?
Chewbacca.
Chewbacca. Yeah, these Chewbaccas, they live on a very cold, barren planet. They appear to come here. They may come here for some type of emergency thing, but all that we've managed to put together over the last 20 plus years are, it looks like recreation, that they're teleported here, using very sophisticated technologies, for a few hours, sometimes longer, just to be here. I don't know how much they pay for this, and what the currency, fiat or otherwise, but they just to be here. But they're avatars. They are what James Cameron would call avatars. They have masks while they're here. They leave footprints and all that. Even the best trackers in the world just walk up and find their tracks just stop. They have been seen to be walking under in streams and under the water and all that because they can. Because they're not, and that's why you'll never shoot one. You'll never shoot one or travel. They're avatars. And we know a lot about the mechanics, basic mechanics of their transport mechanisms and their world. in terms of the physics, I certainly could not come close to the physics of understanding how they actually, let's call it beam, for lack of a better word, down here and back up.
That's amazing. So of all these things that you've done over the years, in the old saying, these are the best of times, the worst of times, are you glad that you're around right now?
Oh, absolutely. And I would like to, you know, I'd even be willing to start a new family because life goes on. And, I just feel fortunate. I feel absolute gratitude, that's all. And I'm a very spiritual man, yeah. We talk a lot about ETs and UFOs, but you know I'm a firm believer in angels and God.
Oh, I know that. You know, every time that, we're together, the times we've met, I mean, you don't come across in person as Dr. Doom.
I had a role to play. I was hated in the military. I told Mike the command. I was the first first electronic warfare officer of the 2nd Armored Cavalry Division, the one that went in and kicked in the first Iraq War. And my job was to tell the commander what to expect in case the Russians, the Soviet, erstwhile Soviets, came across to fill the gap and all that. I said, here's the way it's going to start. For the Spetsnaz undercover agents are going to lob VR-55 grenades, nerve gas grenades, into the schoolyards where our kids, the troops that are stationed overseas, at lunchtime are playing and nerve gas the kids. That's going to buy them a couple of hours of grief, and that couple of hours is worth it. And my commander would look at me and say, you're sick, Dames. You're sick. Because nobody wants to know the truth. Because at that time, dialectic materialism care less about spirit, soul, and, you know, death and all that. And a war is an excuse for anything. But even my commander, who was a Vietnam veteran, and I came in the Army at 17 as a paratrooper, airborne infantry, too. So even they didn't want to. They thought I was sick because I told them the way it is, because the Russians think at the time differently. It's a different world. Our culture, our cultural conditioning is a prison for us. Even our language is a prison, too. And we don't realize it's prison that we're in. But the heart is not in prison, only our minds. And we did it to ourselves.
Well, we sure did it. We sure did. But we're in the middle of it now. And we got to make it work.
And we're not going to make it work, George. There's not enough of
us. That's the old Dr. Doom.
We're not going to make it work. We're going down. We're going down for the count.
Yeah, but you're still hopeful. Is this going to be like a cleansing?
No, I don't give it any anthropomorphic terms. It just is. It's just we've made choices corporately, ourselves. We've made choices. Mankind has made choices. Not all of us wanted to make those choices, but the majority of us did. So we have to be responsible for ourselves. And we made some bad choices, but life is a big classroom. So as long as we learn from them, which it appears that we have not, we're going down.
Ed, we reported years ago, but it was confirmed several weeks ago, that the military sprayed people in St. Louis, testing them biologically with chemicals and all kinds of things. Do you still see those pandemics occurring?
I think that's a non sequitur, George. The military testing and pandemics. Pandemics, I'd be glad to talk about them. In terms of the military testing, I cannot talk about, because as some of your listeners know, I happen to be this nation's top biological warfare case officers. I mean, we're way up there at the top, and I know about all those historic things and things that. Maybe I can say one thing.
I was going to say, you can't say it or you won't say it.
No, George, it's still classified. But I can say one. I think I can say one thing. I'm willing to say one thing, whether I've taken the chance or not. You know how the U.S. granted a sort of a clemency to the erstwhile Nazi rocket scientist.
Yes, Project Paperclip. Right, they brought them all over here.
Yeah, well, what is lesser known is we did the same thing to Japanese biological warfare scientists, Unit 13, 713, that did horrible, horrible things to to Chinese and American prisoners in China. horrible things, testing biological agents that were under design to be used as offensive weapons. Horrible things. And when we captured them, we did the same thing that we did, the U.S. government did with their counterparts, the German scientists, rocket scientist counterparts. We gave them clemency in return for all their knowledge about how American prisoners suffered when they were injected with these various things, those kinds of things like that. And this stuff's still classified, not to mention the tests that have been done on American citizens.
I know. Why would they do that?
Well, I can understand. You can't, maybe can't, but I can. I was on the inside, and...
There's no excuse.
No, that's not it. When you've been conditioned to believe that mission is everything, then you reach a point, I did as a young captain, military intelligence captain, where screw the whale, screw the civilians, heck with all this, you know, we need to accomplish the mission, the threat needs to be countered and all that. That's a mentality that you become acculturated with. I was there, and so I can understand why. Okay, even we need to test this, and I could talk weeks about how, you know, all these kinds of things. You aerosolize a particular test, so-called neutral E. coli thing, you disseminate it in a subway system somewhere in New York or wherever, then you test it and you watch people to see what the effects were, all that, to use that as a baseline metric when you develop the real thing to use it against the enemy.
That's possible. Our guest, Major Ed Dames, his website, learnrv.com. Go take a look at the trailer of The Kill Shot, which is at coasttocoastam.com as well. And that DVD's ready to go right now, isn't it, Ed?
Of course. Yeah, it's been out there, too. And our manufacturers and our producers, they get paid. I think there's a shipping cost. I can't remember what it is, too, but that covers my producers and our manufacturers. That's all.
I mean, it's got enough quality where I thought it would have been on one of the network TV shows.
I have no time for TV, George.
I know. You don't even do that, do you?
No.
So you've not watched us on Ancient Aliens? You've missed that, haven't you?
No, I don't watch any TV. But I do surf the web frequently. When I'm not in the field, I'm on. I do look at it. I keep up with the news. But not entertainment.
I mean, yeah. Can you remote view a presidential election? Do you do that?
Yes, and we've done it before too. But it's sort of an over the horizon thing. If that event already exists in time, and many events do, large events do, then we can pick it up and it's correct. But sometimes, for instance, during the Clinton particular election, out of 6 months out, we could not pick up the winner. We could only end our results of the next presidential election. Winner was a person. We would draw a person sitting in a living room somewhere watching television, and to us, we know that those kinds of things mean that the decision has not been adjudicated yet. It has to be decided, and a point is usually reached within about 6 weeks of an election where it's a fait accompli. It's done. You can remote view it too. This is very different than big strategic events like Armageddon, apocalypse, a war, a kill shot, a tsunami, or something like that. Very, very different. That's why I think the prophets, the real biblical prophets, could see things out thousands of years, because these events that they were foreseeing were so huge that they loomed so big in terms of human consciousness and the matrix as a pattern.
Ed, we're going to take some time next hour, continue chatting with you, but we're going to take some phone calls as well. You're next with Major Ed Dames on Coast to Coast AM.